email with event details to mc@kzfr.org. Friday, June 16th, the Friday Night Concert Series continues at 7 o'clock in downtown Chico. We have Open Mic Night at the Down Low and Scarlet Pumps at Naked Lounge and Five Alarm Funk at Lost on Main. Basement, 9:30 p.m. at Peking Chinese Restaurant. Saturday, June 17th, we have the Posies, 5 p.m. at Highway 70 in Yankee Hill, and Revatomics at 7 p.m. at Wine Time. And Sunday, June 18th, we have the Atomic Apes at 6 p.m. at the Maltese, and Big Sam's Funky Nation at 7:30 p.m. in the Sierra Nevada Big Room. That concludes the KZFR Music Calendar. The Music Calendar can be heard every Thursday and Friday afternoon. Have a great weekend, and keep on listening to your community radio station, 90.1 FM KZFR.
All right, got Jesse Naomi on the phone doing a pre-record around this wonderful event. I'm going to be there. Celebrate Dad Unplugged Arts Fundraiser, and that's going to be at the Chico Women's Club Sunday, June 18th. So welcome to KZFR, Jesse.
Hi, how is it?
It's awesome. So get us all excited about this wonderful event. Give us some lowdown on it and what your involvement is.
Sunday, you guys should come down if you're not doing anything, or if you are, bring the whole posse to the Women's Club, because we're doing a great fundraiser to celebrate Dad and also to raise money for the Unplugged Arts Performance Camp. If you haven't heard of the Unplugged Arts Performance Camp, it's a week long, and this year it's very exciting because it's a sleepover. And the reason it's so important to be a sleepover is because it's a screen-free environment, and so it's unplugged. We're trying to get kids to engage in their own unique imagination without influence of anything else but just who is in the camp and teachers and music and props and art.
What's the age of the kids, and where are they doing it? Where's the sleepover at?
I believe it's going to be Lake Kongkow.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And it's July 31st through August 4th, Monday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then there's going to be a performance on Friday, August 4th at 4 p.m. If you want information, you can call Jean Christofferson at 530-588-5957. Or on Facebook, you can look up Unplugged Arts at collegeofembodiedart.org.
So yeah. This whole sleepover is putting together a show that's going to go off on the 4th? Is that how I'm hearing this?
Yes. Ages 8 to 13-year-olds are going to be making this grand performance for us all, and it's going to be cool.
That's going to be this Father's Day, Sunday the 18th at noon. And it's sliding scale at the door, all for a great cause. And Jesse Naomi is going to be performing. I've got food, raffles, silent auction, and live music by Miami Rogue Rooster. And you, Jesse Naomi. Anything
yes,
else?
Sir.
Anything else we need to know other than we need to be there?
Just bring yourself.
Bring yourself. Can't say it any better than that, Jesse Naylor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Biggs Roller. So, James, if I was to ask you what the Chico vibe is, man, you've been here like 6 years, graduated Chico State with a recording degree, right?
Yeah, graduated with a recording degree. So the Chico vibe is just, you know, it's a small area, small community. It's really laid back. Everyone knows each other. Everyone just has this nice, really relaxed vibe. There's like no worries, and everyone's just, you know, everyone knows each other.
So where do you do sound, man?
I do sound over at the Maltese and Naked Lounge, live sound over there. Occasionally I do some freelance out of town gigs as well, mm-hmm. with another sound company, City Lights, and of course some for hire work as well. Not just live sound, but like recording, producing, and stuff like that.
But you've done a bunch for ER, right? You've done a bunch of the ER sessions, right?
Yeah, I just started, oh man, I think this past November, I uh-huh. believe. Yeah, so I think, I want to say we're about, at least with me with them, 10 to 12 videos probably we've done. But they're coming up on their 200th video, so I want to try, actually I'm trying to implement something to do something really big and special with those guys. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they've been at it. They're the ones that have been, like, you know, opening doors for all the local artists and even, like, upcoming bands that have been passing through. So I think that's a really cool way, especially with someone like me behind the scenes, as well as Layla and Jeff, to get to know artists even more, a little more intimately. Mm-hmm. You know, you see a live show, but also you get to know the artists and build that camaraderie mm-hmm. within the community and the artists themselves.
So if people are interested in contacting you to do some sound, man, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can contact me. just on Facebook.com/ James Chato, C-H-A-T-O. Yeah, messaged me.
Well, I'm going to send you a friend request. Guillermo Mass, sending you a friend request. Thanks a lot, James, for being out here and all the sound stuff you do.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
You're a very sound guy.
I got it.
Smoke ain't rising. It's hugging the ground. Smoke ain't rising. It's just hanging around. I can't catch a clear breath. My lungs are turning brown. Well, it's 100 degrees, but I got 3 layers on. Well, the fire moving, and I don't wanna get burned. I'm guzzling water. While I'm cutting line, I drink gallons of lukewarm water while I'm pulling line. I hear a river in the canyon. Oh man, a swim would feel fine. Oh, dive deep into the water, swimming in a waterfall stream. I got my yellow clothes peeled off. I'm finally get clean. But then I snap awake at just a firefighter's dream. I'm really napping in the dirt by a black oak tree. A captain watching for the fire in the heat of the day. Well, we work tonight, drip torch back burning away. Back burn blues, working all night long. Pretty nice though, the Persian showers are out tonight. There's no moon, be dark. Gotta wait for the temperature to drop and the humidity to rise. Around midnight we light up the torch. Well, there's a snake by a stump, man, looks like it's ready to strike. It's got a big fat head and a rattle that snake could bite. But it's the hornets and meat bees, that's what gives me the fright. They're coming out of the ground, boulder rolling, crashing through the brush down the hill. Boulder rolling, crashing through the brush down the hill. Step in the tree, don't want to be killed. Down the hill, rolling me, crashing through the brush down the hill. Stepping back of this tree, I don't want to get killed.
All right, it's Jim Brobeck on this week's Enterprise Record Sessions. It's a weekly program they do where they record live musicians. They do a written word around it, social media. It's just a wonderful thing. Welcome to the studio, Jim Brobeck.
Thanks for inviting me back in, Guillermo.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to see you, Jim Brobeck. Tell us a little bit about that song we just heard, including the title.
It's called the Web Hollow Backburn Blues. Web Hollow is a it's one of the tributaries of Big Chico Creek. It's located up near the top of Cohasset Ridge. I was a firefighter for 10 or so years. And back in, I think it was 1990, there was a big fire coming up out of Pine Creek. And California Department of Forestry decided they wanted to do a back burn from Webb Hollow up to Cohasset Road, up at the top of the ridge near the helicopter pad, to try to keep the fire from spreading all the way over to Highway 32. So I was on that fire crew with a bunch of other people, and we had to stay up late at night waiting for the right conditions. It was a very dark night. It was in the end of August, or mid, or early August rather, when the Perseid showers were out. So I incorporated a lot of observations into that song from my firefighting experience.
Did you journal when it happened, or you just like a year or so, or sometime later, you kind of thought back and wrote it down? Or
Just memories? Yeah, I journal with my songs.
There you go. That's what we were saying before we turned the mic on here in the studio. Speaking of journaling with your songs, man, we're blessed. You're going to play a live one here for KCFR. What's the name of this song, Jim? What's the back story on this one?
This is a song that I play when I play in establishments that cigarette smokers frequent. Back when I was younger, people would smoke inside the bar, and there wouldn't be so many butts outside. Now there's butts outside all these established bars, and the streets are covered with them. All the movies now that have tobacco for dated ambiance, they want to show this is back in the 1980s when people still smoked cigarettes openly, and people are always pitching the butts on the ground, damn it. Thousands of butts. I pick up cigarette butts as kind of a therapy to calm my mind. I pick it up with a pickup stick, and so this song is about cigarette butts.
Yeah, it's the biggest litter item by count.
Yeah. I can verify that.
Yeah, you can, Jim Brobeck. Jim Brobeck here on KCFR 90.1 FM.
Cigarette butts, don't flip them on the lawn. That's where my baby sit down. Keep your cigarette butts, don't flip them in the street. That street walk to the gutter and they end up in the creek. Keep your cigarette butts, don't flip them in the stream. That stream flow to the river and they end up in the sea. Your cigarette butts, an insignificant piece of trash. Wear a billion filter butts a day, end up real fast. Keep your cigarette butts and keep your cigarette packs. Don't throw them all around, put them in the trash.
You know, I quit smoking when I was 21, Jim, and I'm certain there was a point that I put cigarettes out on the ground, but that wasn't my MO. We had ashtrays. We put them out where we should put them out, man.
Well, when I was a boy, my dad would have me empty the Ford ashtray in the street.
In the street?
Wow, that was a job to keep the car clean. He'd take it out and say, hey, dump this over in the gutter, son.
Whoa. Well, you know, we all love our dads. We got a couple more minutes, man. What do we got? You got another short song? Or?
Well, sure. Yeah, I got 50 short songs.
50 short songs with Jim Brobeck, man. Shout out ER Sessions, man. It gave us the idea to bring Jim back in, man. It's always good to have you, Jim.
Right to be happy, but sometimes you'll be sad. Sometimes you'll be hungry. You have a right to be fed. Sometimes you'll be lonely. You have a right to love, 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 love. Oh, can't wait anymore. This world can't wait anymore. No, wait, wait no more. Wait. right to work. You have a right to rest, and a right to struggle when a challenge is part of the test. You have a right to sing, and you have a right to dance, 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 dance. Whoa, don't back no more. Hold back no more. No back. Back no more. Back. Back no more. Peace is what we want. Peace is what we need. Yeah, peace is what we want. So come on, come on. Got no right to be reckless just because you're strong. No right to be mean to prove that you're a man. No right to be ruling just because you're rich. Some man too damn rich. Come on, step down from your throne. Step down from your throne. Oh, down, down, down from your throne. Justice what we want. Justice what we need. Yeah, justice what we want. So come on, come on. You have a right to be stupid, but you're better off when you're smart. And a right to be foolish, and we have a right to laugh. And a right to be talking, even when you're wrong. Sometimes everybody's wrong, so better hold your tongue. You better hold your tongue now. Keep your peace. Keep your peace is what we want. Peace is what we need. Yeah, peace is what we want. So come on, come on. Yeah, peace is what we want. Peace is uprising is what we want. So come on, come on.
Thanks for coming in, Jim Brobeck, man. Until the next time, there's Hasbeen's open mic. Jim's there quite a bit. Get down there and check him out. A bunch of other beautiful artists, too.
I might go to the Down Low this evening.
There you go, Down Low. We're promoting that. Go see Jim. I might head in there and check that out.
Okay.
Jim Brobeck. All right, it's always a pleasure to see you, Jim.
Gracias, Kim.
The Chico Vibe. Made possible by the generous contributions of KZ Bar supporters and by In-Town Camp Brown, located just minutes from downtown Nevada City, providing a vibrant camping experience. The historic wooded 15-acre family-friendly campground is just 2 miles from downtown, offering tent sites, RV area with hookups and deluxe canvas tents with electricity, real bed, and linens. For reservations and information, visit intowncampground.com or call them 530-265-9900. All right, Guillermo Mash here on behalf of the Chico Vibe here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And I'm really pleased to be doing an interview here this morning with Tom D. Giovanni.
There you go.
With Tom D. Giovanni. And he's the steering committee chair for what's called the Property-Based Business Improvement District. And we're going to do an interview with him around what's going on with that. So welcome to KZFR, Tom D. Giovanni.
Great to be here. Thanks, Bill.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how much you love the downtown business area.
Well, I've been here in Chico now about 30 years. My wife and I came here, the two of us, and we had three children, now all grown and out of the house, as it were. And I've always had my office downtown in Chico. I first started at the Silberstein Building, which had that terrific view of the plaza, mm-hmm. And eventually bought some property a little further to the east and have been there as well. So, when I mention this, even though I'm a developer and builder, downtown is more in my DNA than suburban development, honestly. So it's been great to be downtown for that long and to get to know all of the folks here.
I mean, it's precious for me, too. And I spoke years ago at City Council, when I first came to Chico, Tom, is how much I love the downtown, because I grew up, I literally grew up in Methuen, Massachusetts, in a downtown business area, right outside of downtown business
area. Down in, for, you know, for folks who kind of specialize in urban planning and design, downtown Chico would be called an intact downtown. You know, it really has great bones. The street network, the variety of buildings, the great, in some cases, you know, the great hardware store of Collier's, the corner of Broadway and Main, and it's one of those spots you just do most of my shopping downtown, to the extent I shop much, do virtually all of my restaurant patronage downtown. It's just a great place to be, and you can feel it. I mean, there's an experiential quality to this that's really important, a sense of belonging and place.
So what's cool is now that I know Tom D. Giovanni, I'll see you all the time now.
Right.
What's cool about Chico's. Once you get to know
we'll
people,
bump into each other more.
Yeah,
right?
We'll bump into each other more. But let's get into this interview here, Tom, and great place to start, I hope, is what is a property-based business improvement district, or PBID? What is it, Tom?
Well, it's a private sector initiative to manage and improve the environment of an urban district, and most often a downtown district. The PBIDs were created by with the state of California in 1994, and there are over 100 of them in the state at this point. And frankly, there's also over 1,000 of them across the country. Actually, California was a little late in creating this entity. But what it does is it the improvements or the management and improvements of the environment are funded by a self-assessed and self-governed assessment. So property owners essentially are agreeing to assess themselves on the tax rolls a certain sum and aggregate that. In this case, it'll be about $450,000 for a set of services in the downtown area. We've done a lot of research to really understand how these work and what the benefits are, what the characteristics are. And there are, again, many across the state of California, but the ones we've focused on the most are in Sacramento. There's three of them in SAC. There's another three in Pasadena, including the old town of Pasadena. Of course, scores of them in the Bay Area and Southern California, but we've studied Berkeley's pretty extensively as well.
They're state guidelines or quote-unquote state laws that govern the PBIDs.
That govern the PBIDs, yeah. Exactly. So what you have to do is you have to figure out what your program of work is, what other services that are going to be delivered, and ours will focus on what are known as clean and safe services. Downtown needs to be cleaner. It needs to be a little safer. This will be done in conjunction with what the city already provides. The city is required, in fact, by law, to sign and execute what is known as a maintenance of services agreement. So as property owners step up and assess themselves to the tune of $450,000, they can be assured that the city will maintain a level of service downtown, and so this will be augmented, essentially municipal services. Now, I should mention that within the district, there's a geographic boundary to this special district, as it's called, with these special services, and it's roughly from First Street down to Ninth, from Normal over to the halfway point between Orient and Flume. Covers about 45 blocks, and it's about 300 or so properties, about 160 or 70 or so property owners.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. That leads into this question is where you are in the PBID approval process, quote-unquote the public forum, which is part of the state guidance,
right,
and the voting timeline. Where are you guys at on all
right
that?
Well, you know, so after we had put together our research on this and looking at some of the best practices in other locales and drawing on the experience of managers and operations directors in these other locales, we put together our materials and began to kind of hit the streets. The first step is to have a petition drive to get 50% or more of the property owners to agree to endorse it. Gives you the ability to then bring it to the city and request that they accept the petitions and then issue a ballot to the affected property owners. So we brought forward the petitions to the city in mid-May, and a few days after that, it was, I think the 16th was the hearing, a few days after that, the city issued ballots, mailed ballots to all the affected property owners. They have until July 5th, actually, so a little over 45 days, it's almost 47, 48 days, to either mail in or drop off their ballot to the city.
July 5th is going to be the public forum. It's actually going to be a city council session?
Yes, it will be. Yep, it'll be a city council session. There will be proponents, and I'm sure there'll be some opponents there as well. We mailed all of the materials out, and then we set up meetings to talk with folks. We'd already done some, if you will, kind of some early meetings to gauge the interest, and there was clearly an interest in having some augmented clean and safe services for downtown. And so the folks who came to a different conclusion basically said, no, I don't want this because I think this is something the city should do. And that's been the most common response for those who don't want to see the P-bid or would rather not have an assessment on the tax rolls for their property. Our response has been, look, we agree. This is something the city should be doing. But the city is in a fiscal bind. It has been for a while. And like many, frankly, other cities around the state of California, their general fund has been hit pretty significantly following the Great Recession and the long period of recovery after that. And so as a practical matter, we have to sort of face the reality that we need to step in and fund these services ourselves as property owners to make downtown better. And one of the things we explain as well is that this entity, this PBID entity, has a finite life to it. It's a five-year life. It can be extended, but we need to go through the same process again of petitions and then a ballot. And so there's a real focus on getting the job done and showing some results here. And so while we respect those folks who disagree, we think in the long run that they will they'll appreciate what's been done. What we have seen is when PBIDs are established, it's always hard to make that first pitch, if you will. And because what you're doing is you're asking, you're basing it sort of on it's not exactly a promise, but we're relying on the results from other PBIDs across the state. And we've shown those to some folks as well. But when that 5 years is up, typically what happens when they are extended, and most are extended, is that the vote to do so is anywhere from 10 or 15% higher than the initial establishment. So the renewals are always, and they come as a function of people actually seeing the work done on the ground.
Listeners, just joining, we're talking with Tom DiGiovanni, a business owner down here. He's the steering committee chair for the PBID process. Property-based business improvement district.
Improvement district, yes.
Yeah. What would your take be? Because if I look at the downtown, I've talked to some of the business owners, Tom, and I happen to lean in that same area of, I think the city should be doing it. So now you're taking a situation where the city hasn't applied resources.
Right.
I see a lot of the business say they'd like to get more cleaning services.
Right.
To me, you're almost setting it up. Of course they're going to want to continue doing this because right now it's not working. I mean, what would you say to that?
Well, I guess it's not working, and therefore that's why it's needed. And there's still the ability to, if for some reason the city's finances take a turn for the better after 5 years, there could be something like, we can limit, we don't need as many services, so it can be slightly less, or we can focus them more. So there is the opportunity to change the package, if you will, of services. And I'll also say that, I think, again, there's another characteristic of this that I didn't mention, and that is one of the appealing things to the property owners is this is a separate legal entity that's being set up where the funds are deposited, and it's governed by a property owner majority board. Now, the city will have a seat at the board, of course, and we also have invited the university to have a seat at the board, and I think that they're quite interested in doing so. So there's some real accountability here to start with, and the folks who are making decisions about the allocation of those resources are the folks who are making or writing checks themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's almost an identity of interest between those board members and the rest of the property owners as well. So By and large, these have been very successful. I've yet to hear of one that was disbanded at this point.
One clarifying question on the voting. So as you described, you needed, quote unquote, to go to the city council and say, here's my proof of a majority. I don't know if you have a list that was signed or whatever. Is that going to be proved by the voting? So in other words, you're going to get, is, you know, 50% of the business owners are going to need to see 200 and whatever the math is, are going to have to see that many yay votes come in. Or if only two people say yay and one say no, the business improvement district goes forward. Do you understand the question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Here's the nature of the initial step, which is the petition step. You had to show that it was greater than 50% of the total. And with the city's vote, the city is a property owner as well. And these votes, I should mention, but it makes sense. It's rational and it's equitable. The votes are weighted by the assessment. So there are some folks who have assessments that are in the five-figure range, anywhere from $12,000 to $18,000. There are many others who are mostly in the four-figure range, but the votes are weighted by those assessments. So we had something on the order of 64% of the weighted votes on the petition, inclusive of the city's vote itself, because the city has is actually the largest property owner in downtown, no surprise, with the parking lots and the plaza and such. But when it comes to the ballot, the first qualification is it has to be greater than 50% of the total assessment of $458,000.
Of the fees, got it.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The ballot is that it has to be a majority. So there are some folks who will, either opponents or proponents, who may not send their ballot in for whatever reason. And this is often the case. There's 100% of the votes don't come in, is what I've been told by our consultant is typical. So, no, those don't get counted. Only the ballots that are submitted after a 45-day period are counted. And then if it's a majority of those votes, that's when it
is. Is it
passes.
A secret ballot, just like I would go into a ballot box? Or is it like, you know, you can kind of conjure together the people that said no? And
no, it is a secret ballot.
It is a secret ballot.
It's
okay.
A secret ballot.
Okay.
To my knowledge, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And the ballots aren't even opened until the meeting itself. So the city clerk will open the ballots.
Well, they're going to open the ballots on the 5th, but the ballots have already gone out.
Oh, yes. They've gone out. They went out on the 19th, the 18th or 19th of May, and they're due at the very latest. If you walked in on the 5th at the hearing, during the public hearing, you can still have your ballot counted. Mm-hmm. I think most folks will either mail them in or drop them by well ahead of that, but there may be a few stragglers who come in late.
I think it would be my only pitch, because I'm a guy that likes to get people involved in the process, Tom.
Yeah.
Return those votes, man. Make your vote be heard.
Yeah.
I think this is a question that a lot of people have. You know, why is a property-based business improvement district, or PBID, necessary when downtown already has a Downtown Chico Business Association, or DCBA?
Yeah, it's a good question. Very different function. The DCBA is mainly been focused on services to their business members. And by the way, the DCBA was formed in 1975, and they were one of the very first business improvement districts in California. In fact, my understanding is that they were only the fourth, which is, I think, a great achievement. In some ways, I have a great affection for the half a dozen or so retailers who planted their flags in downtown when, by the 70s, so many retailers had left downtown. And that, you know, people like the folks at Zucchini and Vine, or Bird and Hand, Made in Chico. I mean, those folks were terrific. They really understood, I think, in their bones the importance of downtown and the appeal of downtown. Now, you fast forward 40 years, and of course that's axiomatic at this point. You know, of course people love downtown. Well, it's a different generation that has come to understand that, or come to love downtowns in ways that perhaps that they were sort of neglected some 40 years back.
Versus,
so the DCBA was formed to promote downtown generally, you know, market downtown, if you will, and to try to enhance the business climate of downtown, the retail climate, and so forth. And that's their charge. PBIDs are a different animal. And so that's why, and they're set up in a fashion that the PBIDs are just for property owners to essentially assess themselves for cleaning and services downtown and making downtown safer and the like. So in most cases, PBIDs in California are just focused on that. There are a few cases where over time the two functions merge into one group, but typically that's after 5 or 10 years of PBID activity. And so I think this will enable the DCBA to focus more on the services that they deliver to downtown merchants, as well as the great events that they put on.
Are you guys going to take Clean and Safe from the DCBA once the PBID is...
Yes, because right now, Clean and Safe activities, honestly, and I know that the DCBA director would confirm this. Yeah, Melanie. I actually happen to be on the DCBA board. I served, about 15 years ago, and then I was asked to put my hat in 2 years ago or so. And the Clean and Safe activities as they exist now really are not enough. It's sort of insufficient to the task. They are able to raise, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year for a 12-month period, which is just not enough to have the kind of change that you want for downtown, where the sidewalks are cleaned on a daily basis, they're pressure washed, a downtown guide patrol walking through downtown. And so the budget for the Clean and Safe services right now are about $400,000. So it's about, $35,000 a month or so. It'll deliver about probably 200 hours a week of safety patrols and cleaning teams. And so I think you'll see a marked difference in the look and feel of downtown. And again, we took a lot of this from other successful PBIDs in California.
I'm just going to clarify the facts. We'll move on to the next.
Sure.
I thought I heard the number 35,000 is raised currently for Clean and Safe, and now we're going to be going to 450,000 with this new process.
Right.
Will that 35,000 go away wherever they're getting it, or would
that
be
35,000 up to now? Over the past several years, has really been donated by a handful of people, and frankly, after this many years, there's a little bit of donor fatigue. When it's a hand, it's 3 or 4 or 5 or maybe 8 people who are writing those checks. Frankly, I've been among them, and there's some folks who really care about downtown. But it's not enough, and B, there's a certain inequity to that. If it's benefiting a broader group, it really ought to be spread to a broader group.
Okay.
It's more rational, it's more equitable, and frankly, it'll have more of an effect.
So what role, if any, will the DCBA play in the PBID if the PBID process is approved via ballot on the 5th?
Well, I'm sure there'll be some coordination, but really they are two separate legal entities governed by two separate boards. The law basically says it needs to be that way, unless there's a formal, if you will, merger. Again, has happened in a couple of cases that I'm aware of, but we would rather just keep the focus of the DCBA on events and marketing and the focus of the PBID on Clean and Safe.
Got it. So the work plans, this is a question I'm sure our listeners are going, what are those work plans? I wrote it up as, what are the PBID's plans for the $450,000 yearly fees that will be flowing into their coffers? I know you mentioned a little bit about guards, and you mentioned cleaning.
Sure.
So maybe you could expand upon that or contract.
Well, some of the, it's assisting visitors. It's serving as an eyes and ears for police, where if police are needed for a particular situation that arises, monitoring and trying to discourage panhandling activity, trying to deter drinking in public and so forth, reporting graffiti so that can get cleaning team can be on it, and referring, and importantly, referring to those in need to social services. I mean, there's a significant cohort of folks in downtown who we've had some conversations with Laura Kutsona of the Jesus Center. I've probably had 3 or 4 meetings with her to try to figure out what is the right way to have a connection to social service providers. Again, these are general activities, and the real activity is simply being visible and walking around and keeping an eye on things and being there to help. And one of those points of help, if you will, or helping refer some folks to social services.
Question I have, there's a lot of confusion around, armed guards, some people think they're not downtown anymore. I see them walking around. I mean, are the armed guards part of the Clean and Safe right now for campaign and what's going to happen going forward?
Yeah, my understanding is that the Clean and Safe, the armed patrols are not downtown for their Clean and Safe activities. They are downtown apparently for the DCBA's Thursday night market. That's what I understand. Now, we've done a pretty extensive study of PBIDs around the state. Very few require armed patrols. And I would expect that would be the case here in Chico. And so that's what one of the things we'll be recommending and discussing as a steering committee to the eventual formal board that will be impaneled after the PBIT is put together.
Because I interviewed someone that's a real, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. He works out of Sacramento, and his name's Bob Erlenbush. He's the regional director of the Coalition to End Homelessness.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, and I verified this with several other sources, he was stunned that there's armed guards. So he was really kind of pushing back, kind of going, the PBID really should take a long and hard look at arming the guard. Okay,
I really am
glad to hear that because it's like, oh, my God.
I absolutely agree. And we've done enough of inquiries here that it's not the current practice for most PBIDs at all.
No, it's not.
So
I don't know any.
I recognize that, and I think other board members would recognize that too.
The other thing I'll slip in, because you talked about helping folks that are experiencing homelessness and mental illness, he had some strong words, and I'll forward you the interview. It's a beautiful interview, 6-minute interview from someone that's been doing this work for 40 years.
Good.
He had some very, very poignant points and very straight on points. It's going, people with guns trying to help people connecting them with services, really not the best point of entry. So
I agree, and this is one of the reasons why we've opened up a real channel with Laura Cuzzona and others who are involved in social service, provision of social services here. We know that that is part of the solution, having a sort of an understood protocol so that these patrols can be helpful to these folks and know when to call and know who to call in certain situations. And that seems to me, Bill, it really does seem to me that this kind of the state of the practice. And one of the things we're trying to do as a let's call it an informal board, this steering group, is to find out what the best practice is and make those recommendations and put those in place.
Maybe I can even connect you guys with Bob Erlenbush, who's done a lot of work around that. But I'd be willing to help any way I can kind of around the consulting part of that, because I know Sacramento has different components, like navigators that are hired that help.
Right.
Yeah, that's a term that's well vetted in Sacramento.
There's another one for downtown guides is another, but they're doing the same broad set that homeless outreach. Oh, that's right, the navigator team.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really the same folks, but that it's sort of a subset of the overall downtown guides. Mm-hmm. And they've got in my research here, there's a half a dozen different service partners that they connect with. So I think that would be a model to really use, and that's my view.
So folks just joining, we're here with Tom DiGiovanni, the steering committee chair for the PBID process that's going through an approval process with a ballot outstanding that's going to come in on the 5th. And we're down to the last two questions and a wrap-up. So we got three things. So I appreciate you spending this time. And so what's your response to businesses that are disgruntled about the fees that will be levied? I'll give you an example. I've heard from several businesses that have said, I can take that $5,000 and do a better job than you're going to do. So don't take my money. If you're going to make me take my money, I'll spend it in a different way. So what would you say to those, my term, disgruntled business owners?
Yeah, I would say that when you pool resources, as is what this really is, this is an assessment across 300 properties in a district, and the resources are pooled, governed by folks who are also in the similar position as owners, you end up being able to do far more across the district, not just in front of your own building on the sidewalk, but there's an increase in capabilities. And after all, it's not just your sidewalk that you have to be worried about. It's the environment, the entire environment of the downtown, particularly in the kind of core 12 or 15 blocks of the major area of restaurants and retailers. I would also say that the proof is in the pudding. There are now over 100 of these in California. They are very successful at what they do, and property owners have continued, in most cases that I know of, to extend them. But I could completely understand somebody making those points, and for them, I think we have to prove that it's worth it. And if we don't, frankly, it'll sunset in 5 years. So we have to prove that this does make a difference that is actually above and beyond that $5,000, if you were to put that figure out there.
Many see this move to a Chico PBIT, and there's history. This is a nice tagline question. There's history in other communities, and I've reached out to many folks around this. There's history in other communities and how other PBIDs are structured and what they do that coincides with their concerns that this is a move-em-along gentrification process. What would you specifically respond to, a move-em-along gentrification process as it relates to the PBIT?
Well, it's so if by moving along you're referring to homeless and folks, the focus really here is on behaviors, not their status as homeless. At the same time, many of these folks do need help, and that help needs to be made available to them. Now, I'm quite sure, based on, what I've looked at in other locales, that these kinds of activities, that is, clean and safe activities, are not intended to be pushing people out to other areas of Chico, but rather trying to pull people into services. Homelessness, as we all have come to know here, is a broad problem. It's not just affecting here. It's affecting most cities, everyone. And so we want to use the best practices that we can that we've seen in other locales to make this, you know, humane. But we also I think, and there's something to be said for this, we also want to defend the integrity of the civic spaces we have downtown so that people do feel safe and welcome in the plaza, for example. I mean, I can show you some of the frustration and the kind of almost the heartbreak in some of Facebook threads I've seen where people will talk about how they were either physically accosted or meant to feel either unwelcome or meant to feel intimidated. So there's an element here of folks who are not the down-in-their-luck homeless or folks with mental illness, which often can come from extended homelessness, where both their minds and their bodies get ravaged. There's a different cohort here that we need to face up to that are much more aggressive. And we need, as a community, to defend our public spaces and to make them available for everyone.
Yeah, just a quick comment, because maybe we'll even do a follow-up on this, as you guys do, too, because I really am looking at making this a great process for all the folks involved, even the marginalized communities, Tom. But typically in other areas, or even what I see downtown, they get pushed to different areas. So now a lot of folks are in the downtown plaza. But these laws and these quote-unquote behaviors end up overlapping to literally anyone that's in the downtown area. And I don't have a hard time finding folks that I kind of neighbor with and reach out to. And frankly speaking, I don't reach out to the criminal element because I'm out there to help people, and there are criminal elements. There are criminal elements out there. So I'm really looking forward to maybe doing some follow-up interviews or even bringing me, you know, do some consulting or whatever to make sure that we do this in a really concise and managed way. And I had Laura on last week, actually. We did a nice long-form interview like we're doing here. So I just appreciate all your answers and you know, all your diligence. And Tom's got a whole set of papers here, and you know, you didn't have to look at them that much, Tom. So it's it's obviously to me that you've been very involved in this process, and I really want to make sure the folks, it's not a TV audience here, that understand Tom, you really understand what's going on, and you put a lot of effort into this. But any wrap-up comments?
Well, we're trying to do the best we can. We really are want to rely, not to say rely, we want to take the best practices out there. In fact, we're having a few PBID managers and people who are familiar and have run these entities to come up later in the year as we shift from a proposal to something that's been established. Or that we know that we're going to go forward and actually try to really tune the day-to-day work and the week-to-week work out there so that we're doing it, we're starting right, and that we're avoiding mistakes.
Well, thanks so much, Tom.
All right.
Guillen Lomomash for the June 16th, the Chico Vibe, right here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And I'm doing a lead-in for an interview I'm going to be doing with Meredith J. Cooper, who penned the front page article in this week's Chico News and Review titled Fate of the Arts. Passion, not public funding, drives a new approach to keeping the arts alive in Chico. First paragraph, Diamond Alley is one of those small, quintessentially Chico spots that inevitably gets taken for granted. Cutting through the alley, which connects 3rd and 4th Streets, people often walk underneath the arches en route to their destination without noticing the thousands of colorful tiles that adorn the pillars. Stephen Cummings makes it a point to notice. For me, when I walk down that alley, I'm framed by art, he said recently from his downtown Chico office at North State Public Radio. How many people walk down that alley and don't take a second to think, why is this so pleasant? It's because you're surrounded by
art. Thank you, Mash, with Cesar Sanchez on the phone. He's going to give us a lowdown on what's going on in the music scene.
Hey, what's up, Guillermo?
Hey, not much, man. Thanks for being such a powerful force for live music, man.
I think everybody else is more of a powerful force by being really active in the scene. I just look at a lot of different things and see what's going on, and I try to promote everybody and not just what I'm doing.
You do a real good job at that, Cesar. So what is going on this weekend, man?
Well, I mean, just tonight alone, there's 5 things that I'm looking at. So tonight at 7 p.m. at the Naked Lounge is the Scarlet Pumps City Sick and Sitting and Waiting, which I think is in all locals. There's a house concert that's a private house concert, but if you know the guy, I think his name's Mark, you may find the link online on Facebook or whatever, but it's Hannah Jane Kyle, Kyle Williams, and Hugh Hammond, which I think is going to be a doozy of a show.
Doozy's a good word there, yeah.
So if you could find your way to it, it's at 7 p.m. Then there's at 7 p.m. at the Down Low, the open mic at Down Low, which is, I think, more of a band-oriented open mic, not necessarily open mic for poetry and other things, but I think it's like more of a band-oriented, and the Sons of Jefferson are the featured band tonight, which are
sweet.
Some of my favorite people. Jeff Coleman's one of my favorite dudes around town. He's been doing music for many years. He's a chef, one of the best people you could ever run into, great guitar player, great violinist.
All right, man.
Starts at 7 p.m. It's free. It's all ages until 10 p.m. And then right above in Los Angeles, Chico, there's a 5-alarm funk with High Minds Cafe, a local band, and Otis Bog People, both locals, who will be opening up for the 5-alarm funk.
Shout out for the locals,
I'm not
man.
Really familiar with the 5-alarm funk. I have seen, I've heard High Minds Cafe and Otis Bog People. It's going to be a more of a funkier show, kind of a little bit more of the hippy-dippy stuff, where, or, you know, anything in between. 9 p.m. and it's 21 and over. And then the show that I'm going to be at and that I am really looking forward to is the Nervous Lovers show at the Maltese Bar with locals The Empty Gate with Trish, who was in Vomit Launch, and Solar State with a bunch of different people who have been in many different bands in the past 10 to 12 years, including the French Reform, the Amblers, Sisterhood, and others. And the Shimmies, actually. Empty Gate has Bob Howard. Got legends from, you know, the Chico past still doing their thing.
Gregory Spont. Shout out Gregory, man. Greg's going to be on keys, right?
Yes. And so that's going to be happening at the Maltese. That's my home. That's happening tonight.
Friday. Tonight. I'm going to be there, too.
16th. That happened at 9 p.m. And there's a whole bunch of other shows going on. I make a list of them every week on my personal page and on the We Play in Chico page on Facebook.
We Play in Chico is a good place to find out what's going on. But
it's also a great place for people to have a forum. It's also another place for people to be fickle and basically get out a bunch of stuff that really they should keep to themselves or to the people that they're talking to.
I agree. Plus, if you're on a Facebook group, man, you're not listening to live music, huh? Unless you're looking at your phone. And what the hell are you looking at your phone when Empty Gate's playing, right? That's what I'm thinking.
Guilty of being on my phone a lot. Well, one of the things that really helps with all of that is being a photographer. So whatever you're really good at, whatever you're passionate about, go after it. Let it be your fidget.
Beatles are, you know, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. Thanks a lot, Caesar, man. Hopefully I'll see you tonight. Maltese. Yep. Yeah, man.
And take care, Guillermo.
All right, man. All right, Guillermo Mash here. And I'm introducing Meredith J. Cooper, managing editor at the Chico News and Review and the author of this week's feature, Fate of the Arts. Welcome to KZFR, Meredith J. Cooper.
Thanks.
It's wonderful to have you in here, and it's wonderful. I've read your article. You did such a fine job representing public arts in Chico. And what's your favorite art pieces?
I love the murals. Just walking around downtown, just looking up and just seeing art is pretty cool. Walk out of a parking structure and see art. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is. Those archways that we were talking about on the lead-in.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite benches around town?
You know, I took a real look at them when I was doing this story. It's another one of those things that you take for granted because they're just there. And you walk downtown and you see them, but maybe don't really look at them. I really like the Errol Flynn one. It's pretty cool. You don't really see the whole thing until you look at it from one direction. And
which one is that one?
That's the one that Stephen Cummins is photographed
that he's sitting
in
on.
The story.
Okay. Yeah. What are some of your other perspectives about art?
We have so much art around us that sometimes I don't even notice it or I don't even know that it's there because I've never gone to that park or, you know, I went to the Oakway Park to look at the spiral that's on the cover and I'd never been to that park for whatever reason and it's cool. There's art just everywhere, just in downtown and in the parks and underneath the freeway, you know, the strangest places, and you see this beautiful thing. Some people don't like all of the public art, which is fine.
To me, that's what's beautiful about art in a way. Everyone perceives it differently. So what were some of your takeaways from the essay? Takeaways, you know, some things that really maybe were surprising or really kind of stuck with you after putting this long form piece together.
I think the economic survey that they did, the economic study that they did, it was a couple years ago, but it just speaks volumes about the value of art to a community. Over $500,000 just to the city in fees and permit costs and taxes. That's a huge amount. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much is coming back into the community beyond just the art itself. That was an eye-opener for me.
Yeah, I was interviewing Jason Cassidy. We talked a little bit. He's Arts Devo, of course. And he's in Europe right now. He used to be the first show he hasn't been on because he's in Europe. That's a really good excuse. Jason Cassidy, if you're listening, get out there and look at some art in Europe. Don't be listening to us. But then we talked a little bit about the impact about 1078 closing, because that will certainly have an impact on the businesses in that area, because people would come to that spot that wouldn't normally be there.
Right, and that was one of the things that I didn't really get to get into as deeply as I wanted to, but several people made the point about 1078 in that public funding has pretty much dried up for the arts and arts groups, including 1078. They used to get thousands of dollars to help them with the rent and other things. When the public funding dried up, they had to look to other things, and they looked to live music, and they got a alcohol license. And then ultimately, it was the live music that got them kicked out. So that was pretty striking as well.
Well, it was, because, you know, I think in the interviews I did around this, I'm not saying people, they were dancing around that whole issue, but it wasn't phrased so directly as it was in your piece with a quote. I can't remember the person that quoted, but yeah, they felt the need to, you know, have to expand to raise money. But for me, someone that loves the arts and actually loves live music, I thought that was a plus for that location.
Definitely.
I just think people tend to look at, you know, people that show up for certain events and characterize them one way or another when they're just people. And it was never run by a nightclub. So anyway, I could go off on a tangent on 1078. We love you, 1078 Gallery. Any other favorite venues? I mean, there's certain venues in town, maybe the Blue Room or El Rey.
Oh, the El Rey is great. It's a nice, intimate venue for seeing live music. I think live music is probably my favorite form of art.
Any closing comments, Meredith?
One of the things that I took away from the story was how much public art in particular can alter a community or a space, how much people appreciate public art, and the sort of unintended outcomes maybe of having art in public places is that it makes people comfortable going there. People want to go there. It can cut down crime. I know our city council has stated that their number one priority is public safety, and they seem to take that as, let's put money into more cops, which is fine to a certain extent. I think that there are other ways that we can improve our public safety, and that was one thing that I learned when interviewing people for this story, is that a lot of people view having art in public places as a deterrent for crime. It attracts families. It attracts people who want to take care of what's around them versus attracting a criminal element. It's a step towards public safety that maybe some people don't think about, that I hadn't thought about before. And just having these things and taking care of them is important. We don't want to lose them because we don't have any money to maintain them. And we should maintain them just like we do our streets and our trees and our everything else that we consider important in the city.
So I think the tree canopy plays a lot too. So you're in a spot where you're surrounded by trees, you're surrounded by architectural beauty downtown and art pieces. It definitely has an impact on folks, versus like being surrounded by concrete, you know, skyscrapers with limited amounts of greenery. People behave differently in those environments. It's just absolutely no question about it.
Yeah, and it gives character to the town. You know, it gives Chico its character.
Yeah, and it's got a great character.
Definitely. All right.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming in, Meredith J. Cooper.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Guillermo Mass signing off for the Chico Vibe, man. We're giving you a teaser for one of our arts features for next week, which is Biggs Roller CD release June 24th at the Maltese. No spoilers, but I was laughing pretty hard, man, at what I was putting together. But you're going to have a little snippet of what you're going to hear next week. And make sure that you put in your calendar, Biggs Roller CD release, June 24th. Right on.
Biggs Roller, if you love music, if you like weird, if you like true, come on out to the Maltese and hear some music. It's going to be a little rough. It's going to be a little rugged. It's going to be nice. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be sweet. It's going to be soft. It's going to be all that. So come check it out.
There's great bands. There's Dick Dagger. I don't know where they're from, but they're great. And there's Horrible, which is like Dan Glam. If you guys like Dan Glam,